everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the HSG Student Podcast. My name is Sira, and together we are looking for exciting stories and personalities from the HSG. In previous episodes, we have seen many times how life can take unexpected turns. Behind every success story lies a lot of hard work and the determination to achieve certain goals. Our guest today describes his move to Switzerland as a second chance. We will find out what he means by this in our conversation, and I'm delighted to welcome Mahmud Tahavi in today's episode. Dear Mahmud, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, as usual, please introduce yourself in one word only.
Ambitious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate a bit on that?
So I describe myself as ambitious because I'm someone who really likes tough challenges. I get, let's say, bored when it's too easy. Mm-hmm. So I really like challenging myself all the time with new things to do that I've never done before. And that's partially why I'm here at the University of St. Gallen.
Yes, I mean, that's a very good personality trait as well, to be ambitious. And that also means that you set yourself certain goals and you aim to achieve them. So that's a great trait. And I'm sure that we will find out more about that in our conversation. To go on with a very general question, when you think about your life right now, what do you think is like most defining about this phase?
I would say change.
Okay.
Especially right now because I'm arriving at the end of my bachelor's degree. And it's a bit scary, a bit stressful to find out what do I need to do with my life, which master's to go, should I take a gap year and work, should I completely change my majors and go study something completely different. So it's a bit of a stressful period right now, but it's also very rewarding. So what I learned is the choices that you make aren't that defining. Like one choice won't change a lot in a lifetime. So for me, what's the most important thing is just to continue working and never stop trying and not overthink every choice, but be true to yourself and continue moving on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, that's something I guess that most students will get to that phase at some point, because all of a sudden you're done with your bachelor's and then so many opportunities open up. Mm-hmm. But it's also a challenge to find out, okay, where do I want to go? How do I want to create my life? And I mean, especially in our field, I feel like it's not that clear where you will head in the future. However, as you also said, for every decision, some new doors will open. So I guess also when we talk about your past, we will see that, yes, sometimes it might not be the most intuitive decision, but then it will have some consequences that offer more chances for you in the end. So I guess that helps to keep it in mind. But now you've been in Switzerland for around 10 years.
Yes.
My first question, would you say it feels like home to you? So do you feel like Switzerland is your home? Or
definitely.
Okay.
Like I remember the first year here in St. Gallen, I've stayed for like 1 month here without going back to Geneva to see my parents or my friends. And the first time that I came back to Geneva, I was really shocked with the feeling that I had. I was like, hey, I'm going back home. And suddenly it hit me. Oh, damn, Geneva is your home now. But yeah, it definitely feels like home. I got used to the people. I got used to the language. My friends here are my second family. So yeah, I would definitely say it's my home.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a great moment of realization. Do you think that needed some years to constantly develop? So, or how was that process?
It's kind of a long process. It goes between I love it, I hate it. You really get a bit lost in this whole situation. I would say it takes at least 2 to 3 years to get really used to the new culture, to the new language, and to start developing these, let's say, attachment feelings to the places, the place where you live.
I can understand that. I mean, it's a very different situation. But I was on exchange. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was my first time where I was in another country for a longer period of time on my own, more or less. Mm-hmm. And so I had some similar thoughts. So I can understand how it is over a very longer period of time. But can you maybe tell us, and especially also our audience, a bit more about where you grew up and what life was back then. Mm-hmm.
So I was actually born in Saudi Arabia because my father used to work there. And in 2002, we came back to Syria. So I was 1 year old, I think. And so I grew up in Damascus for 14, 15 years there. Life was actually pretty good before the war, before 2011. I had a normal childhood. I went to school. I had lots of fun during summers. Life was really, really great. But after the war started, it got a bit more complicated. But still, I was a little kid, so I had less stress and anxiety than grown-ups about the war. Maybe the first 2 years I was a bit scared, but after that, you just get used to it. People want to continue living. You don't want to live in fear, because if you live in fear, you're not really living. And yeah, at one point you just live normally, but in a war context. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then did you fully understand what was going on, or was it more or less also, I don't know, maybe not wanting to read the news anymore and just trying to, I don't know, stay in your bubble to keep yourself protected?
I think I was. So one day I woke up, I didn't want to go to school. I was maybe 13 or 14. The weather was really cold and I didn't feel like going out of bed. So I go and I tell my mom, no, I don't want to go to school. And my mom tells me, it's okay, just go. It will be done in 4 or 5 hours. You'll be back and you can sleep again. I get ready. I go out and I start walking towards my school. And where I had my school in Damascus, there was a military building. And there was always guards in front of the building. They would rarely like talk to me or say hi or anything. But that morning, one of them stops me and tells me, I need to go back home. There's going to be an explosion near your school. And I said, okay, no school today. I was a bit happy. And I go back and I tell my mom what happened, but she sadly doesn't believe me and tells me, stop lying and go back to school. So I got a bit angry and I start walking again and I go to my school. The bell is ringing. We go to class. And after like 10 minutes, we hear this massive explosion. All the windows are trembling. And apparently there was like a bomb in a car in front of the door of my school that exploded. And I wait like 5 minutes and my dad is already at the school and he took me out of the class and we went back home. And I was a bit happy because I was going to be able to tell my mother I was right and you were wrong, you know. Yeah, that was a bit funny.
I mean, also because nothing happened, right?
Yeah.
And I understand it in this situation, especially for you, this was funny. But now hearing this from, for example, my perspective is also very shocking. Because, I mean, yes, they warned you, but the fact that something explodes in front of a school is unbelievable.
And how did they know?
Yeah.
Like, that's right. Another question, like, if you know about it, why don't you do something about it? But they didn't want to.
Mm. I'm very happy that nothing happened in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I guess it also gives us a good impression on how life was. So you just had to learn to deal with it, I guess.
Exactly. So yeah, I definitely understood what was going on. But maybe it was you choose to underestimate the consequences, to be a bit ignorant, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you want to live. And I was 14. I wanted to go out with my friends after school and go grab something to eat, walk a little bit. And it happened like multiple times where I was with my friends and there's a bomb somewhere and my mom calls me, where are you? And what are you doing? And she got really stressed. And with my friends, we were like all laughing, even though it was something a bit dangerous. Like you could lose your life. But as I said, you get a bit used to it. I don't know if we can say it's sad, but I think it's somewhat of a coping mechanism.
Yeah, coping mechanism was the word that was in my head right now. And I think that's also just human. I mean, you cannot be, or it's good if you're not devastated the whole time, but you try to still make the most out of it. But then did you back then, like being a teenager, think that you would stay in Damascus, in your home for a longer time? Or did you know that it's not going to work out in the long term, or it will not really change to the better, or What were your thoughts for the future?
So I didn't really think about the future, to be honest, because if you want to live, you live day to day. It is a context where you can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like there are some periods where nothing was happening. And like this, in one day, things go really, really bad. Everybody starts buying enormous amounts of food and stocking up. And, you know, nobody goes out of home because the Americans are going to do this. Or, you know, like all the political context is getting really, let's say, ramped up. I've never thought that I would be out of Syria.
Okay.
Like if we go back 10 years and you tell me, yeah, you are going to be talking to Syra and doing a podcast at the University of Sangana, I would totally say you're bullshitting me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's crazy to think about it, how life can change like this quickly. So to answer your question, I had no idea. I've never thought about it. Never expected it, but mm-hmm. life is unexpected.
Life sometimes takes unexpected turns.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, now you're here and you achieved a lot here, also at the University of St. Gallen. You just said that now Switzerland feels like home to you. Mm-hmm. But are there some things that you still miss about Syria or about your hometown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I really miss the apartment where I grew up. Miss my bed, miss the people there, the culture, the food is really great over there.
I thought you would say that.
I miss my friends, my family, of course. But yeah, you get used to it with time, especially when you don't get, even if I miss it, I'm living my life in another context as well, in another culture. So there's something, you know, to balance the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that means you still have friends and family in Syria and you're still in touch with them? Or
Yeah, of course. Still have my uncles, my aunts in Syria. I have some friends as well there. I talk to them regularly. With my friends, actually, we talk like every night, every 2-3 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And has your relationship to Syria changed now that you've been away for a longer time? I mean, you're still somewhat in touch with the people there, and I guess you still get to know what's going on. So how did that change for you?
So it really changed 1 year ago after the change in the regime.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, I remember I was with my brother and we couldn't sleep because we were always watching the news. And it was always like a dream to see the news on the news. That Bashar al-Assad is not here anymore and he's fallen. And when we saw this, to be honest, I cried because it was something totally, it was really a dream and you were seeing it in real life and it was hard to understand and realize what was really happening. So that was a turning point in the relation. Before that, I was just, let's say I've lost hope a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because after 10 years of revolution and fighting and people losing their lives, nothing really changed. It went even in a bad direction. So yeah, it was a bit complicated. But now we are hoping for the better. We are working for the better.
You believe, and again, that it might become better in the next years?
That's one tough question to answer. I don't know. Of course, I would love that. But again, in this region, it is really complicated. And if history taught us something, it is, yeah, maybe Syria would be the first miracle country to overcome its challenges in this region. But I will definitely do my best to help my country to go in that direction. But still, I need to stay, let's say, careful a little bit and put my efforts and energy in something that would be really beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that point. And I mean, it's always hard to predict the future, you know?
Yeah. Like, I would love to go all in and, you know, start working, linking people together between Syria and Switzerland and, you know, just trying to develop, let's say, the country. Standards of living, education, and all of that. But again, need to be careful. Maybe the political context is not that stable yet. So I'm waiting for now and we're hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great idea, especially also because you are somewhat in between the two worlds. Mm-hmm. You lived in both of the countries, you know, both cultures and systems. So there's always a lot of benefits if we bring people together and open the discussions.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as you said, it's between two different worlds and it's really, really different. Like it goes from our way of going to buy grocery, for example. In Syria, it's like a bit of an experience.
Really?
Yeah. So you go to the markets, you need to negotiate a little bit the price. You know, that guy that sells, tomatoes, the other has like better cucumbers. So you go to the other guy. Yeah, it was fun. And here you go to Coop, you don't speak to anyone. You go, you take your stuff and pay and go out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit really different in that sense as well. Like you have much more maybe, you're much more in contact with people there.
Mm-hmm. That's something I often criticize about Switzerland, actually. The fact that many people are very anonymous mm-hmm. can have advantages, of course, but there's also a lot of disadvantages. And I also noticed in different countries that it's different and people actually talk to each other and can be also a bit more stressful. It always depends on the context. But now speaking of the different cultures, are there some, I don't know, habits that you notice that you still have and apply here now that you lived in Switzerland for a longer time? Is there something that's still like active here?
Like habits from Syria that I still apply here today?
Mm-hmm. Or a mindset or something?
I'm a bit applying my Syrian culture in the way that I deal with people or talk to people. I'm not really used to being anonymous, you know. I talk to everyone, I say hello. So it was a bit of a shock actually here at the university because it's really competitive. And it was the first time where I felt that I might need to adjust a little bit more to a new context, even though I grew up in Geneva. The difference between Geneva and St. Gallen, I felt it as well. So, it was a kind of, another journey coming here.
Yeah, I absolutely see that. I mean, and from the most western part to the eastern part of Switzerland, there is certainly some differences, even not only the language, but then also culture-wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, talking to people and being open is also something very positive. And it helps if someone takes the initiative, you know, because then many people don't do it and they are happy if someone takes that role.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it doesn't work with everyone. Some people really prefer just being on their own.
Yes, that is also true. You never, you only know if you try, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe to go back to this stage where you moved. No. To go back to the stage where you moved to Switzerland, you were around 15. Mm-hmm. And this is quite a formative age, I would say.
Yeah.
How did you then experience moving to a completely new country? Because you already said you did not really plan to leave your home.
No, not really.
So how was that for you?
So actually, when we knew that we were coming to Switzerland, I was already, you know, putting myself in a new mindset of you are going somewhere new where you are going to be really challenged. And since my brother was already here, he was already putting the pressure on me, telling me you need to learn a new language, you need to go to school, it's not going to be easy, don't be too happy, you know. And so I was kind of prepared. But when we arrived, I remember like I was walking near the lake in Geneva for the first time with my dad. And it was completely crazy to tell myself, you're in Geneva, Switzerland right now, and you are going to learn French. And in 4 years, you need to pass your matura and you need to read 12 books in French. And it was really out of this world, you know. I was really motivated to learn French, especially when I saw that I am capable of it. Like when I started speaking a little bit, I had a lot of help, of course, from friends in Geneva, other Arabic friends as well who spoke French, and that really, really helped.
Mm-hmm. But you said that your brother already moved to Switzerland.
Yeah, he was. So that's how we got out. Basically, my brother had an internship at CERN, even though he was in Syria. So he came to Switzerland with the internship, and then he did. He asked for asylum here. And afterwards, we got a humanitarian visa to come. So we were really, really lucky to come to Switzerland by plane without going into the seas, without going into all these dangers. So yeah, thank God.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you were kind of prepared through your brother. Yeah. But then like the first few weeks and months, how was it for you to just overall rearrange? You already mentioned like the language aspects, but I'm sure it's not only the language, but because I mean, all of a sudden you're in a new system, in a new like surrounding, and you have to get to know to every single structure. For example, groceries, you know,
so,
you
yeah,
already mentioned that example.
Yeah, it was really difficult at first, I'm not going to lie. You miss your friends, you miss your family, you ask yourself, what did I do? Because there's no coming back, you know. And the first months were, I wasn't doing a lot of, like, I wasn't even at school yet. So, yeah, it was pretty challenging at first. But then when I went to middle school, it got a bit better because I had something to do, focus more on the language, on learning. And my brother got a bit angry at me because the first 2 months I wasn't doing anything.
Okay, I mean, it's totally understandable if you need some time to just also process everything, because there's so many new impressions that you need to deal with, and you, I don't know, need to start shifting to the understanding, okay, I will live here now.
Yeah, but I think the whole process takes time. So even if you're prepared, it's going to take the time that it needs to take, and it's different for each different person, each different family as well. We don't adjust in the same manner, you know, to new contexts. So I think that is pretty important to keep in mind when, let's say, changing settings.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you think it was easier for you still being a teenager compared to, for example, your parents who were grown-ups?
Yeah, for sure, of course. Because let's say I lived 15 years in one culture, they lived 60 years in one culture, and now you need to adapt to this whole new context. And I think it's really difficult to adapt when you've been used to something for a long period of time. So you can't really change someone after 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
So there's a distinction to be made between adapting and changing, you know? So sometimes adaptation feels like you are forced to be changed, and sometimes it doesn't. And in terms of integration, I think it is pretty important to know that distinction and steer away from, you know, they are forcing me to change to be accepted here. I don't think that's a good mindset to have. It's more about I'm growing and I'm adapting and I'm learning a lot of new things that I would never had the chance to learn them otherwise, you know.
Yeah, that's a very good mindset, and I feel like many people should keep that in mind, even if they don't move to a new country, for example, or even a new city. Sometimes already that can be a huge change, but then people surrounding you can also learn from you. So it's always bidirectional, so you can profit from each other, and it's not only you who needs to change completely and become a totally new person, because then you would not be true to yourself anymore.
Exactly. And what was cool as well about Geneva, it was... it's pretty international. And I remember in high school, like my group of friends, we came from all of, like there was someone from Latin America, there was someone from France, Australia, really all over the world. And they were all Swiss, but they had as well their own cultures. And that was pretty interesting and, let's say, rewarding to live in.
Yeah, and that's super fascinating then as well. If you get to talk to each other, and then you find out, okay, there are some parallels, there are some differences, and then you can profit from each other.
Exactly.
I mentioned it in the beginning, you described moving to Switzerland as somewhat of a second chance. So maybe what did you mean by that exactly?
So a second chance, because here we have we're really lucky because all the doors are open. The only thing you need to do is work and be dedicated and don't get demotivated, and eventually you can achieve your goals. But in other contexts, in other countries, even though you're motivated and you have everything you need, it's just impossible to achieve your goals because of corruption, because of war, because of a lot of different factors. And I don't think people acknowledge this enough. It is super important to really know that we're lucky here. If you want to be a doctor, you can be a doctor. If you want to be an astronaut, you can be an astronaut. At least you can work towards it, you know? But in other contexts, it's much more difficult.
I mean, yes, you need to be ambitious, and luckily you are. But I mean, it takes more than that, of course, and the system is very relevant. For example, I was a teacher in Nepal, and I mean, the Nepalese system is very corrupt. Yeah. And so these students, many of them were extremely ambitious, but I knew, and they somewhat knew as well, the chances are pretty low to actually achieve what they wanted to achieve because the system doesn't allow for it.
Yeah.
And this is,
that's really sad. Like, yeah, I know in Syria there are some really ambitious, smart people who only need like just a chance to prove themselves. But even that is pretty hard to get. So that's why I describe it as a second chance.
Mm-hmm. And I think you put it very well. And that's something also we, for example, in Switzerland or in Central Europe need to think about a bit more often, that we are extremely privileged with our systems. And even though not everything works well, still there's chances if you have potential and if you're ambitious and you want to work, you can work and you can achieve something. So that's a great thing to just keep in mind.
Yeah. And I really like the Swiss educational system, to be honest. Like, even though like university is not the only choice, you can do, in French it's called CFC. So
like an apprenticeship.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I find it like, it's just such a good idea because especially at that young age, you don't necessarily want to study for 4 years, then do a gap year, then do 3 years, and you know, so you can do something where you work, you learn, let's say something more physical. But I think it's also beneficial because when you're 17, 18, you have a lot of energy, and it's a bit not weird, but a bit hard to stay in class for 8 hours sitting, you know. And some people just want something where you can move a little bit more, talk more to people. And yeah, this system is really great.
I absolutely agree. And also the fact that if you, for example, decide for an apprenticeship, you can still study or you can still do another apprenticeship.
Exactly.
Or even when you study, you could also do an apprenticeship afterwards. Or there are so many ways to do it. So.
Exactly. The doors are wide open here in Switzerland.
But now for you, I mean, now you're a student, you're finished with your bachelor's. Was it clear from, I don't know, from the beginning you moved here that you want to study, that you want to attend university and therefore you really want to do your matura? Or was it not that clear?
For me, it was pretty clear. My parents were really clear about that since I was a little kid. So in Syria, the system is a bit different for school. So you have, let's say, a national test when you go from middle school to high school, that you need to get a certain grade to be able to go into public schools. If not, you need to go to a private school. And in high school, it's kind of like in France. So you do a baccalaureate and it's pretty hard as well. And you need to get good grades to be able to go to. So for example, I think the total was 240 and you need 238 to be able to go to medicine. If you don't have 238, you can go and be a doctor.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it's a really a dumb system. I have to say, I think here in Switzerland it's just a great educational system. If you want to be a doctor, you can be a doctor, and you don't need to be super good at math or super good in one subject to be qualified for it. You know. Yeah.
And it doesn't all depend on one exam, for example.
Yeah.
But you have a bit more chances.
And going to university, I always grew up, studying with my brothers, my brother and sister. We always studied together and they were at university. I was still in school. And it was just pretty obvious for me that it's what I want to do. In terms of choice, why did I choose business administration? Why did I choose St. Gallen? That is a bit more complicated to answer. The University of St. Gallen, as I said, it was an additional challenge that I wanted to take. I really loved my time here. I lived with three of my friends. It was awesome. And business administration, I was really hesitating between business and economics. Then I talked to some people and I went with business because I thought it would open up more doors for career-wise.
But then you knew that you don't want to study in French. Because this is another thing. I mean, you said you already had to learn French, but now you decided to study in English and some courses even in German.
Yeah. So that was, the courses in German were really, really hard. Actually, it doesn't bother me to study in French. Mm-hmm. Because now it's kind of my second mother tongue, you know, and changing the setting because, again, I was 6 years in Geneva, 7 years in Geneva. So the change was really beneficial for me. I grew up here as well. I got a bit more mature. I learned a lot of things about Switzerland, about Swiss German. So, yeah, that was, I think it was the right choice.
Mm-hmm. And now, once again, a little step back. I mean, before university, when you came here, you had to adapt to this whole new school system. Did you struggle with school or was it really just until you got the language and from then on it was completely fine?
Great question, actually. Thank you. I didn't really struggle. Like scientific subjects, I was pretty good at them. And the main issue was the language. So in middle school, when I really started at say school here, I had great grades everywhere. But like in history, geography, French, those were the grades were, let's say, a bit lacking. Mm-hmm. Same thing in high school. In high school, it was a bit different because, you know, you more, let's say, less into studying and more into, you know, living your life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't, I struggled a bit with Italian. I couldn't take German in high school, even though I wanted to. They told me that there was a lot of difference between normal Swiss people and me who just arrived. So I had to take Italian. So yeah, I struggled with Italian, but other subjects, I think it went more than fine.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that it was hard language-wise if you don't have to learn one language, but then also another language. I mean, I also struggled learning French and I still do, and I'm not confident enough, for example, in my French to do this podcast in French, not at all. So I can understand this.
Yeah.
But then still, I mean, you managed to do your matura and then from then on, I guess you got used to the system and then...
Exactly. You get a bit more confident and you get you learn what works and what not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned also that your mindset in a way and also the fact that you like to take new challenges and you're pretty ambitious. But now if you compare your mindset with the mindset you had, for example, 10 years ago, what has changed the most and what maybe stayed the same?
What has changed? So I'd say 10 years ago, especially when I arrived here, I was a lot more, let's say, dedicated I'm still dedicated to helping other people. I think that's my passion in life. And I'd say my way in help, the way that I'm going to take in helping people changed a little bit. So, for example, at the beginning, I was thinking maybe you can work as a social aid worker, you know, advise new refugees that arrive here in Switzerland, walk them through the whole process, you know. And then, you know, with reading and talking to people, my mindset a bit changed. For me now, helping people can be achieved in multiple ways. You don't need to be a social worker to do that. You can do it in other ways as well. So, for example, I don't know if I can open up a school in Syria, fund something with social development goals. So, yeah, that's the big change, I'd say, between now and 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is also something very relevant to just understand new possibilities you maybe did not know before.
Exactly.
I mean, it's also part of, I don't know, getting older.
Growing up.
Growing up, yes, exactly. But so you plan to keep this connection to Syria also in the long term?
Yeah, definitely, especially now because things are a bit changing. I would love to be the link, let's say, between my two cultures, mm-hmm. because I consider myself having the Swiss culture and having the Syrian one. So it would be great if I can, you know, combine both and find some way to benefit both countries from it, you know.
Mm, that's a wonderful ambition. And I mean, I'm sure you can change a lot with that mindset.
I hope so.
And I mean, there's a lot of time. So whatever the future brings, you can, I don't know, adapt to that. But apart from that, you now reach the end of your bachelor's. So we already kind of discussed that it's hard to, I don't know, find your right path. But mm-hmm. what are your current plans? How do you plan to proceed?
I still have to do my bachelor's thesis.
Yeah,
so that's up there on my to-do list. But afterwards, I don't really know yet. Maybe doing an internship and definitely continuing and doing a master's.
In which direction?
I'm hesitating between maybe trying and going to the sim masters, but I don't know yet. I haven't thought about it yet. Mm-hmm. Or the MacFin.
Okay.
Yeah, could be fun as well.
So staying in St. Gallen.
Yeah, I think I fell a bit in love with the city. Not the weather, but the city.
I just looked outside and saw the gray sky. I was like, yeah. Also the weather, or
no, not the weather.
Maybe it's the Eastern dialect.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's it.
Maybe one last, but maybe also big question: if you could talk to your 15-year-old self that just arrived in Switzerland, what would you tell him or yourself?
A lot of things.
Hmm? It's a hard question.
It is a hard question. I tell him to keep working, to work more, push myself even harder, and maybe give him a bit of reassurance that after 15 years, you're going to be happy as well. So, yeah.
I couldn't say it better. And that's a great message, I would say, and it sums it up very well. But I feel like also our audience just now got to know you a bit better. And they see what's all behind it, because once again, I mean, every success story, for example, has a lot of steps in between until you get there. And there's always going to be ups and downs. But if you're ambitious enough, you're going to manage to figure it out eventually.
Yeah, for sure.
So thank you very much for your openness. I really admire the seemingly effortless way with what you have mastered every challenge and also continue to do so. At the same time, I know, as I just mentioned, that there is more to it than meets the eye, and I find the path that you're taking very admirable. And the story underlines that hard work pays off eventually, and I wish you continued success with everything you set out to do. So thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you for inviting me. It was really a pleasure to do this.
I'm very happy to hear that. And to all listeners, be brave enough to break new ground and work towards your goals until you achieve them. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on the HSG Student Podcast.